Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I'm a writer, actor, and comedian. And our guest today is Kylie Brakeman. She is an actor and comedian who has written for The Tonight Show and The Kids Tonight Show. She is known for her viral character comedy videos, which earned her a spot in the Great Performers issue for the New York Times. And you can find her on the podcast Artists on Artists on Artists on Artists. Hi, Kylie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What are you reading these days, if anything?
I've been bad. I have not read many books in the past few years of my life. I read Jeanette McCurdy's book, which was great and kind of haunting. And I'm in New York right now, and people leave books on their stoop all the time, and you can just walk down the street and pretty reliably find a book to pick up. It's sort of like this like outdoor public library type thing. We've found something called the Steampunk Bible, which is maybe just a coffee table book, but it's been a fun read. And then we found this book called Sapiens, which is like the story of the story, the nonfiction, the science of how humans came to be and like why we adapted the way we do. And so I'm a little bit into that, but it's been a little sporadic since it was required by oh, but I read okay. I love I'm like trying to prove to you like you're my teacher. I did the summer reading, I promise. I read oh my God, what is this play? It's called Something Mr. Burns. Wait, I'm looking this up. It's set in post-apocalyptic. Oh, it's just called Mr. Burns, a play by Anne Washburn. It's in a post-apocalyptic universe where all TV and everything was destroyed, the zombie apocalypse, whatever. And it's like a human colony, and their form of entertainment is trying to recite old episodes of The Simpsons to each other. So it's really interesting. The first act is like them trying to remember different lines and like jumping off each other, and like maybe there's danger, but like maybe there's not. The apocalypse is still new. And then the second act is them trying to mount the play as theater, but it's become this weird system of like competing theater troupes who all remember different lines of The Simpsons, and people are like selling lines to each other, and like theaters will like buy. It's like this weird form of currency, and then the third act is just sort of like chaos. But it was really interesting.
Oh my gosh.
But that's been kind of, so it's been kind of all over the map.
I love that though, because that reminds me of I recently read Station 11, which is also post-apocalyptic and is about a because digital or physical media is dying in a
Yes.
post-apocalyptic world where all they have left is Shakespeare, which is
Oh,
perfectly
wow.
transitions us into
Yeah, the
our book
same year.
today, which is Macbeth by William Shakespeare.
Wow. We love Willie.
When I was in film school, I was on the writing side before I became an actor. So I feel like I'm finally like having my moment to like be an actor who's really annoying about Shakespeare. It's my time to shine. What
Yes, you
story?
know the lines, you know the lore, you can yeah.
How did this come into your life?
My theater class in high school did it my senior year. I wasn't like super in it. The boys got to be in every play because there was a handful of five straight men, and so they got all the parts, and so they got to be the lead in everything. And it definitely didn't give them like personality disorders at all. I was just like a silent, made up gentlewoman. Maybe I had a line, but I think my part was just fake. But then I think I read it in English class again, and then I studied abroad in London for a bit, and we did like a whole unit on that. And so everybody, it's very funny because it's just like Lady Macbeth is just such an insane role, and to see people attack it as like one of the first things they've ever done is always very silly. But you feel it as like a 19-year-old, you're like, yes, out damn spot, I'm gonna kill myself.
That's true. I took like a history of theater class in college that was about, everything from Sophocles to Lin-Manuel.
Yeah.
And at one point we watched a production. I mean, if you want to watch theater at home, it's really worth investing in National Theater Live from in England.
Okay.
really worth it. And so I think Helen McCrory, RIP, did Medea. And we watched that. And I was 20, 21 in a class full of 18-year-olds. And I was like the only writing student amongst all these acting kids. And I was like, I get it. I know where she's coming from. She had justification to kill those children. It was really bad. But
yeah, I understand. I can really put myself in her shoes and see what it would feel like. Yeah, there's so many going 0 to 100 in early acting school, I feel like. Where it's like, oh, you've never been in a play before? Okay, here are some lines. Unsex me here is such a crazy phrase to hear a 19-year-old say.
We did this in my 10th grade English class where I grew up. You had to do a Shakespeare play every year in your English class. And 10th grade was maybe the best English teacher we ever had. And it was really cool. Like, it's really cool when everyone enjoys English class.
Yeah, when everyone's just like into it.
Exactly.
Guys, it's more fun if we're all into it.
Exactly. Especially when it's a play. We had just done Beloved. And Beloved is such a hard, intense, insane book to start 10th grade with. And of course, like, that has a very casual reference to bestiality in the beginning that everyone clung on to because they're all 10th graders. And so it was like, it's a relief to come to Macbeth and be like, we can all at least understand like beheading. At least we can all come together on that.
Yeah, it's like a very, like, it's a pretty straightforward in the scale of like fucked up stuff. Like it's a pretty straightforward, like, you were told you were going to be king and you have to kill to get there. You want power. You're going to kill to get power and it'll be your undoing. It's like, it's very like nobody's like fucking anything they shouldn't be.
Yes.
It's very just kind of straight down the middle of like, why do people do bad things? It's like the simplest explanation.
Yeah.
And yet there's witches, but.
Well, and I'm glad that we bring up the witches because I like to give a little history class moment with every book we
that.
Do. But like, obviously with Shakespeare, we don't know exact dates, but we believe that the first time that this was performed privately was 1606 for King James, who, okay, here we go into the English line of succession. King James was king of Scotland. Elizabeth died with no heirs. So he also becomes king of England, unites Great Britain. This is about 3 years into his reign. The year before, in 1605, there is the gunpowder plot, which I know anytime I hear that, I'm like, no, I can't. I'm not going to know what that is. I just refuse to understand what that is.
I feel like these are words that I'm supposed to know, but I have no memory of what it is.
All you need to know is a guy tries to blow up everyone who's ruling England. He tries to blow up the king, the queen, the child, all of Parliament. And they stop
Sounds
that.
Sounds like what a gunpowder plot would be, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be that hard when we teach it, guys. We can keep it real simple.
We're going to blow something up. Yeah.
So that happens the year before this. And also King James, a lot of my information on King James comes from a podcast called Noble Blood by Dana Schwartz. Highly recommended if you're interested in history. She has a great episode on why King James really has a bee in his bonnet about witchcraft. So, like 15, 10 years before this happens, King James, King of Scotland, needs a wife. He says, okay, I am picking this woman from Denmark. She's going to come over on the boat. We're going to get married. She comes over on the boat. There's a storm. She gets stranded. He has to go to Denmark. He has it in his head that witches caused this storm. He then writes a book on how witches are the cause of everything wrong. He personally oversees some witch tortures and trials. And then I think at some point he's like, actually, maybe I overdid it. And then tries to like sweep it under the rug.
Wow, growth. Okay.
I don't know enough about that. And I'm really excited one day to learn more about that. But we have all these aspects of witches, of betrayal. We're really getting the zeitgeist. Shakespeare is probably in his mid-40s. He's done Hamlet. He's done Romeo and Juliet. And this is, I think, sort of an interesting moment of transition into his later works, like The Tempest and Coriolanus and A Winter's Tale and things like that. And also right around this time, he does a play that I worked on in high school called Measure for Measure.
I did this in college. It's a problem play because it's bad. It's like It's nuts. When I found out we were doing, I'm like, I had never even heard of this. And then I played the pregnant woman who comes in for like 2 seconds. It's the most like, okay, this is like a bunch of sex tricks and sex pranks, which like, yeah, that's present in a lot of the comedies, but to a degree where it was like, wait, so he's wearing a mask and she can't tell. It's very weird.
Yeah. I went to a very small high school. We had a drama club, and then we had an even smaller Shakespeare club, which, put on like a half hour version every year of the chosen play that year. And I was only ever in it in 12th grade. And 11th grade, they did Titus Andronicus, which is so like maybe the most violent Shakespeare play, really extreme. And like, again, the school was so small. One of the girls who was cast in it also like loved makeup and props. So she was like, guys, I have all the bloody limbs we need. Don't worry about it. And everyone was like, we love that for you, Lily. Get it. And so the next year, the two girls who were the presidents of the club were friends of mine. And they come up to me and they're like, Erin, we know you like theater. We need a new play this year that's not so dark. So we chose this one, Measure for Measure. We don't know anything about it except it has clowns. Please figure out how we can do this in half an hour. Thank you. Goodbye.
Half an hour.
Exactly. How can we put a problem play, a play that, like, I love Measure for Measure a lot. It's not a finished draft, in my opinion. Like, he should have kept working on that.
It doesn't feel like it. I'm sorry for calling it bad, but it...
But it is.
I have no... The way we did 12 performances of this play, and I still don't fully remember what it's about, it was just not clean. Yeah,
exactly.
It definitely seems like it's an earlier draft. And there were parts of it that were cool.
Yeah.
It was also like around the time that our theater professor was getting like mildly canceled, and he was like, we're going to have nuns and whores in all the windows for Measure for Measure. And we're like, okay, what do you mean by that? And what's going on here?
Exactly. How do you talk to 9th or 12th graders to do this whole play that is about the separation of church and state and how absolute power corrupts absolutely, but it definitely didn't work as well as Macbeth does. I think Macbeth, like you said,
weirdly, if you had to do Macbeth in 30 minutes, you could.
Yes, absolutely.
I think there's like a version of it where it's like, okay, here's all the hits. 5 minutes in, you're done with the witches. And and then we escalate from there. And I think we're good. Like I always preferred it to, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like the perception is that like Hamlet is the ultimate like Shakespeare play. But in terms of like what it does, like something that's like covering similar themes, I always thought that Macbeth was like a much, it has like a more satisfying, and maybe that's less sophisticated or whatever, but it has a more satisfying conclusion. There's like some symmetry to it that's nice.
I feel like with Hamlet, every time you try to go into it, people are like, Hamlet's annoying. He's a teenager. You know, he's moody and sullen. And I was like, maybe if it needs a disclaimer right out the top of every scene, maybe it's not the best one.
Yeah, I do love the logic of I'm going to put on a play, and if my dad gets weird watching the play, then he killed my uncle, or reverse. But it's very silly logic. But after that happens, I'm kind of like, what happens here? It's a little less enjoyable.
Yes. I think we read six Shakespeare plays when I was in high school. And I know easily that this was the one that everyone could get behind. And this was the one that was, it was around Halloween. Everyone could get into it. I think it has all of the juiciness because I have a lot of thoughts on Shakespeare being taught in schools. As someone who wants kids to love theater, maybe like you said, this is not the best starting point.
Yeah. I just remember it like, the theater kids loved it because you're already in and you already get it. But in English classes, it always just made the entire genre of theater feel kind of inaccessible, even though it's like when you break it down, you can start to understand it. Mm-hmm. And it's not as hard as you think it is to get the language. Like once you're in it, you're in it. But it might be turning some people off, but maybe they were never going to do it in the first place. So,
but I think this is a great one to reach out to the kids who like really don't want to do it and be like, there is murder. There is blood. You know, and you can really grab all of the kids who are not going to get
It's something for everyone to latch on to.
Yeah.
I feel that. There's murder, there's blood, there's images that are poppy.
Yeah.
And I feel like it can be adapted into lots of things.
Yeah.
I was in a school with like a good drama program, which was nice. They got like all these crazy sets from someone's other job working at Loxa, which is like this. I went to a public school, but they co-taught at Loxa, which is this performing arts high school. And so I think they borrowed sets from there or something. It was like this weird deal, but whatever it was, we had like a nice program that I was very grateful for. But we would do like I think you'd do a Shakespeare every year. It was like one contemporary, one Shakespeare.
Nice.
But there were multiple classes too. So I think there were like 8 plays that went up every year.
Oh my God.
There was just like a lot of interest in it. I went to school in LA. So I think there was like a sort of weird structure where our football team wasn't very good at all. But like, there were so many people in choir and theater. And like the prom queen was usually in theater. It was like a weird sort of thing. And like, I did like high school improv, like, which is not good, but sometimes they would like sell out. It was just like such a weird thing where it's like, this shouldn't be how it is. But it was very nice. I did Midsummer also.
Okay.
I did Macbeth and Midsummer. And then I think we did Dracula one year instead of a Shakespeare, which is also a strange play that I don't fully remember. But I think Midsummer was another favorite just because the costumes were so pretty and like it's such a like fun sort of acid-y, trippy vibe that you can really like. I don't have a lot of like directing aspirations, but I think you could do so much with it. And it's just like a fun romp where like, even if you don't know exactly what's happening, it's still really fun.
Yeah.
And it's so open-ended and just like positive in a way that not a lot of plays can tap into like, okay, this is just like a weird fever dream that we're all in.
I think that's great. I think you're really right on those two. I don't know Midsummer super well, but it feels like you could always shove more kids on stage in terms of doing it for a high school audience. You could always put more kids in. I think there's enough sex that like the kids are interested in it.
Yeah. And you can do the classic like high school way of whenever we would do Shakespeare and we were told like, so this is an innuendo, people would be like, and her bust is then blah 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 blah. Like it was like you always like hit it really hard so that people knew. It was very silly. It keeps people engaged.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the only time I've seen Midsummer was at Baltimore has an arts fair every summer. And I think like everything was raining. So my friends and I ended up going into a random theater and they were doing a version of Midsummer where they had not practiced and they had all of their lines on little tiny scrolls and they didn't have anyone else's lines. So they were all just sort of like trying to double. It was messy.
Oh my God.
Very, very fun. It was really fun.
Having just a blind list of Shakespeare lines without knowing any of the cues for them is a very funny way to do it.
I know. It was cool. It was fun. And I think like it probably wouldn't work with Macbeth, but with that show, absolutely. Yeah.
It's silly. It's like, okay, say I'm out of order. Who cares?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the, you know, the big tripping point on Macbeth is probably just the names, which could be better. Not to give Shakespeare a note, but.
But Glams? How do you say that?
Because I was always saying glamis, and then I did watch, because it feels so wrong just to read Shakespeare, because when I was reading it, I was like, there are a lot of scenes in here I don't remember. So I wanted to watch as full a production as you can get, like without editing a lot out. So I found an old production on YouTube with Ian McKellen and Judi Dench, which was great. I didn't get 100% of the way through it, but yes, they said gloms. I felt very glad that I had checked beforehand so I didn't look a fool.
All these theater people muttering at you, going, Glamis. How dare she? No, lots of funky names in here. There were things that I was trying to remember this like a couple days ago. And I'm like, there's no way the other king's name is Macduff. That's from The Simpsons. His name can't be Macduff. And it was.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
But I don't know. I think the fun thing about learning about Shakespeare when you are in high school, which feels incongruous with like how dense the language feels from a 21st century perspective, is that Shakespeare is so playful. I think that's something that theater people harp on about how cool theater is you can just do whatever you want and the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
And Shakespeare is the birth and the center and the core of that. I was reading it and the Hecate, the Greek goddess of witchcraft, comes on and I was like, she's here? I did not remember that. She's here.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, so much stuff. I think it was an improv teacher who told me this, but it's sort of like no one is ever going to create an entirely original thing. Like,
Yes.
and that was like very freeing. And I think it helps for everything. I think it helps for screenwriting. I think it helps for a lot of things where it's like, it's not like anyone's being unoriginal. It's just like, if you've created something that is entirely unique and entirely original, and no one has ever thought of any piece of it before, then what have you created that is relevant to the human experience? Like, what is, no one's gonna watch that. No one's gonna hear you because you're too busy trying to figure out, like, okay, what world am I in? Like, what's going on? So it's fun to learn about, and I'm sure people watching in his day were like, oh yeah, well, that's taken from that, and that's taken from that, and that's
Right.
taken, and I know this from that. But to us, it all feels like this magic, like completely original thing. But it's fun that theater especially is just like drawing from all these different resources. And like so many things are just retellings of ancient Greek things in different settings.
That was something I think I was so frustrated with in high school was everything's an adaptation and this and that, and there are only 10 stories ever told. And I think it you get to a point where you're like, well then let's calm down and let's have some
Yeah.
fun with it.
And let's tell a good version
Yeah,
of one of the 10 stories that are out there.
exactly. Let's do something fun with it. I'm very glad I'm not who I was back then. Love to her, but she was a little uptight. Was a
Yeah.
little uptight.
But I know that the creative angst feeling of like, I have something to say, but I don't know what it is. It's very real. It like
Yeah.
and coinciding with puberty, it's like it's a weird like sort of second boom of like, but I'm an artist.
Exactly. It and instead of doing my own thing, it was telling other people they were wrong,
Yeah.
and that's part of life.
That's part of life. You have to tell enough people that you're wrong before you realize that we're all wrong
Yeah.
and we are fools.
Fools along the stage, poorly cast. That's not this one.
It's a mere fool, a mere player who struts and frets about the stick.
It's like in the very end,
Tomorrow,
right?
tomorrow, tomorrow. Yeah. There's the word fool is in there. I used to steal the tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow speech and do it in this other bit on stage where I'm just this dude who drinks a bunch of beer and then has like a mental breakdown. So I should know it, but it is in there, I think. It's such a referenceable.
Oh my
There's just
gosh.
some juicy, juicy words in there.
It's amazing when you're like every page has an iconic line and something
Yeah.
memorable.
Oh, this
This is
is, this one's
where.
in this too? Yeah.
I think the thing that struck me the most in this reading of it, because I don't think I've like really sat down with the text
Yeah.
since I was 15, I don't know, is the classic dynamic between the Macbeths and how really bonded they are. When Lady Macbeth is first introduced, she's reading from a letter Macbeth sent her, and he in the letter calls her dearest partner of greatness. And that partnership, I think, is so juicy and meaty and intense. And I think sometimes when you're reading things where the stakes are so high, it's so easy to be like, I don't really buy that. I don't, if my
Yeah.
husband wrote a letter and said X, Y, and Z, but it's like, no, it's these specific characters.
And like in a, to draw it really far out, I think it's like we all know someone who has gotten into a relationship and completely lost themselves in the other person, and then you never see them again because you got a girlfriend and changed her whole personality or whatever.
Yeah.
Like these, I feel like we all know people who are in these like cyclical, hungry relationships where you're just like feeding off each
Yeah.
other, and I think it makes everything that happens so much more believable and so much easier to latch onto. And also just like so yummy and juicy for actors.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You have so many scenes where like Lady Macbeth is saying, we got to do it. We got to do it. We got to do it. But there are also moments where it turns and Macbeth is convincing her and saying, no, we really have to, like, we have to commit to it. And I think something else that really struck me in this reading is how often there are moments of deliberation. There's so many moments where they say, maybe I should turn back. And I think there's this repeated, like, if I want to really like get my MFA, we can break down of like the repeated use of darkness of like stars, hide your light, don't look at what I'm doing. But I think like the moral complexity is a lot richer, I think, than I remember. I think I remembered it as like the witches tell you you're going to be king, so we're just going to full steam ahead. And it's so much better when it's not that.
Yeah. And it's like the witches told us to, so they didn't tell you to. They just said this would happen. And then you're filling in the space between the prophecy and what has to, like, that is a dilemma. And you don't just go straight from mucking around as the Thane of Glamis to that without, it's tough. I don't think I've ever been put in a situation where it's like, here, you can have this thing, but you do have to hurt others to get there. But I'm sure it happens on like a smaller scale all the time. And and you don't know what you're truly going to be like until you're in it.
Exactly.
This is me taking a pro Macbeth stance. He was right to kill.
Was he provoked?
Who knows? But
there are really interesting moments where he says like, well, I didn't have to do anything to become Thane of Cawdor. So like, I don't have to kill anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it'll probably happen. But what if you don't? And there's such a brilliant moment that I don't think I had ever really acknowledged before, where I wrote it down, Act 3, Scene 1, where Macbeth is like, oh, I am not going to have kids. So none of this is going to stay with me. Like, this is for Banquo. This is for Banquo's kids. And for him, I've done this. And for him, I've put my life on the line. That was such a shattering moment.
I didn't really remember that. That is like, whoa, you're it's not even for me, all
exactly.
of this. That's so crazy.
I'm always frustrated, I think, when stories about women become stories about motherhood. And I think that's unfair of me. I think that's just because I don't feel like motherhood's for me. So I think in the past, I've been really bogged down when people are like, well, Lady Macbeth probably had a child and what happened to that child? Because there are references to that. And I think now as like an adult who's more reasonable, I think that is like such a fascinating layer to put in, because there is that line of like, I know what it's like to have a child. And if I had promised you something in this bond between us, in the way that you have promised me, I would have sacrificed that thing that we both know how painful it was.
Plucked it from my nipple and dashed the brains out. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's really visceral and really like, but now, no, it's like a weird, like, I also have similar feelings about motherhood and seeing it in so pervasively in things, but it's like a hard thing to dodge. Like it's kind of everywhere, like and it's being drilled into you.
Yeah.
Even if we want to pretend to be above it or outside of it, it's like there's always going to be the possibility and the like the general concept of like, this is something that could happen to you and you should do it or you shouldn't do it. And for her to be able to like weaponize that and utilize that is, it's very like chilling in a cool way.
And there's a chilling moment. I did not remember that Lady Macduff was in this play at all. Completely forgot about her.
She pops in.
She is one scene, and her like last line is sort of saying like, I haven't done any wrong. Why is this happening? And then she goes, why then, alas, do I put up that womanly defense to say I have done no harm? Like, that never works. So many women have done nothing and we all die anyway. So why am I even bothering?
Like, Shakespeare kind of, I don't know, he kind of got like,
he eats it sometimes.
He does. In terms of like women characters, and they were all played by men, and maybe that like the thing that allowed them to be fuller, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend to know what the culture and the climate was like, but it's a lot of it he is extending like weirdly, like there's feminist stuff layered in a lot. It's like, this is okay, taught by so many drama teachers where like, when you first hear what they're saying, you're like, okay, you have some regressive views and you're whatever, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But when you break it down, it's like, oh, wait, like these are just sort of like animal things in all of us.
Yeah.
And like, it does circle around to being feminist sometimes. Like when you, when you pick away at it, it's like, okay, the packaging of it, not always great, but like when you underlie the like core emotion behind what's happening, it's like, okay, maybe we made some points.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Measure for Measure, Measure for Measure is a really complicated play. In my best memory, it is a young woman who's about to become a nun, learns my brother is in jail for having premarital sex and is about to be murdered for premarital sex. So I have to go and convince the local magistrate not to kill him. And then she goes and finds out the magistrate has the hots for her. So she's like, even though I love God, I am going to be sexy in order to get my brother to stay alive. And I feel like that, obviously very bad, but also kind of feminist for her to be like, no, I have this power. I don't have a lot of power, but I have this one and I'm going to use it.
For a very complicated situation that...
Absolutely. Ooh.
I don't remember why I was pregnant or what I had to do with the story. Oh, I was the, oh,
you were the
wife of the brother. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. You were also in jail.
And I had the same baby. Yeah. And maybe I was going to be.
I think you might. I don't know. I know.
Maybe I would have been okay. Maybe I wasn't going to be killed.
They certainly are not going to kill a pregnant woman. But as soon as you had the baby, who knows?
Who knows what would happen to me? Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
It's a funny pitch for a play that only Shakespeare could have gotten away with after doing a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, because in the most bare bones description that I just did there, the main character doesn't even appear in that. And multiple characters are in disguise. So everyone is in disguise.
An unsellable log line.
A novice... Yeah, a novice uses her sexual wiles to save her brother from death row, more
or
less.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah.
That's kind of the CW.
You could do that.
Maybe.
Freeform?
NCIS? Maybe it's a plot line for some kind of crime something. I don't know.
I don't know. I know I probably tried to think of something when I was in high school, because at that point I knew I wanted to be a writer. I knew I wanted to write for TV. Yeah. So I think at that point I might have been like, no, there's just let me sit here and do nothing for 3 years and I'll have it. Just leave me alone and I'll be able to figure it out.
I got it. I'll figure it out. Did you have the sort of instinct to defend Shakespeare at all costs at like a young age? Because I feel like I had a tiny little bit of it where it's like, now I can be like, that play was weird. But I think before I had to like defend it as part of my identity and whatever.
100%.
Like, no, everything was gold and everything was perfect. And like, if you don't like it, like you just have to understand it. And it's like, no, it's also not for everybody.
Yeah. I think Shakespeare was like the only way in my memory until like 12th grade. That was the only theater we were reading, at least in English class. Like our theater program would do like a play in the fall and a musical in the spring. And so the plays, I don't even remember what they were. There was like a court drama. I never knew any of what they were. I think like Nicholas Nickleby might have been the only one that I remember. No one was trying to say like contemporary theater is cool, which is kind of a bummer because I grew up outside DC and like there is a good theater scene there. Like there's the Folger, which is all about Shakespeare. They're huge. But I think I felt like I knew from a really young age that I wanted to work not as an actor.
But you ended up acting anyway.
I did, through a crazy series of twists and turns.
Life is crazy.
No.
Crazy and silly.
For me and my personal journey, things really changed because of a single professor in college. And I don't think if she hadn't every 5 minutes gone, Aaron, the camera loves you. I don't think I would have been here. Thank you, Renee. Thank you,
Where
Renee.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Savannah College of Art and Design in Georgia.
Okay. That's very cool. Sometimes it just takes one special teacher.
She really changed my life. Thank you, Renee. But yeah, I think I was like, there was this attitude of like, whenever theater came up, everyone was like, okay, it's Aaron's turn. Have fun. Well, like, we're all just sitting here while she's really jamming out.
We'll just chill.
Exactly.
I'm remembering like the first time we did Shakespeare in my like eighth grade drama class. We were like given monologues, and I remember I had the same monologue as this other girl. I don't know why they shouldn't have done it this way.
Yeah.
I think there were like 15 girls and they had like 7 monologues so that you could see 2 versions of each one. Terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
Give everybody their own thing. Don't
rival.
Feel weird. This is not going to turn out. And so I did Paulina from A Winter's Tale, and so did this other girl. And she literally delivered the monologue to me as like a, you better watch the fuck out. Like there was like a, okay, because this, okay, I'm trying to remember the context of this.
Yeah.
It's basically like, what do you want from me? I already like, you killed your daughter. It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What studied torments Tywin has for me? What wheels, racks, fires, what flaming boils and inlets or oils? What old or newer torture must I receive? Like, it's kind of that.
Yeah.
But she decides to go like sarcastic with it, looks directly at me and goes like, what studied torture tyrant has for me? What wheels racks fire? Like, and every single line was like, wasn't it fucking cool the way I said that? Fuck you. Like,
oh my God.
It was so pointed and so aggressive. And then I went up right after her and just like did it. And it was one of the most uncomfortable feelings I've ever, I'm like, what is happening here? But no, Shakespeare monologues can the best and worst in people. And I do also have like a visceral memory of us doing Romeo and Juliet, and Juliet had her like balcony monologue, and all the other girls in the class were like kind of right in the wings, sort of like mouthing it to like know that we all like, that could be me any second. If she goes down up there, it could be me.
Man.
Coming in. I'm going to do it. It's just like that everyone has their hormones and like angst and they don't know what to do with it. And so it all comes out in these, like, it's just the perfect vessel for all of these feelings.
Yes. Which I think it can be frustrating because it's like, you see like kids trying to learn Romeo and Juliet who are the age of these characters and who are like, no, it doesn't, this has nothing to do with me. And you're like, no, it really, I understand because your teacher is teaching it that way and they are wrong, but no, like I promise.
But no, it actually has everything to do with you. You just gotta go forward with your general vibe that you're currently rocking with right now. Like, she is not some distinguished princess. Like, she is everything that you're exhibiting right now.
Exactly. She is you. Because I think that's the whole... Yeah. It's frustrating with Romeo and Juliet to have so many kids be like, these kids are stupid. And you're like, yes, correct.
Yeah.
That is the point.
You're 14.
That's the whole point. They are stupid.
Yeah. It's the sort of lesson that I keep learning, which is like, oh, it's sometimes it's better when you don't act that much. Or when you think you're acting, it's like, it feels fake.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't have to act that much. I always get bothered when people start the debate of like, well, did Shakespeare really write his own stuff? And that is like, it's not like he's getting like residuals. Like, it doesn't really matter. He's a cultural amalgam that we attribute things to. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
What I think is great about Shakespeare is that it has, and we were saying, you know, there are 10 stories or whatever. Shakespeare is great because it's a catalog with like every range of human emotion in there. And we can just sort of say like, oh, you're feeling this way today? Well, let me get that for you. Like it's a good like series of like drafts on tap. I don't know, like at a bar, you know?
Yeah, there's like the what would have been the CBS multicam, which is probably like As You Like It or something like that. Taming of the Shrew, where it's like, this is a sitcom premise. Like, this
exactly.
And it's like light and full of sexual innuendos. And then you have your like dark, twisted, like, I don't know if you watched Succession, but I like, it's not like a direct Macbeth thing, but there are Macbeth vibes in the air. So it's like, It is just like a bunch of different feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe it's not that we have, you know, 10 stories or whatever. It's that like we have not 10 feelings,
I
but
think we have 10
that we
emotions.
have 10 feelings. And Shakespeare, you know, there's a key for every lock. I'm mixing my metaphors, but I think Macbeth feels particularly appropriate and lasting because it's about ambition and it's about the costs that you'll go to. And I think especially like when you're entertainers, you are sort of like, well, if it gets me the part.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I wonder what I would do if someone came up to me in an alley in a cloak and offered me a monkey's paw of something. I don't know. I don't know what I'd do.
And obviously this is because it's in the zeitgeist, but yeah, it feels oddly akin to like Maxine for me right now.
I don't know if I know the reference.
With Mia Goth that just came out, the slasher movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen, I used to be on AMC Stubs. I would go all the time. And then my boyfriend was like, hey, so me and a bunch of other people are moving to Regal. So we're going to move to Regal. And I'm like, okay. And then I cancel my AMC Stubs and I go to Regal. And then we realized we didn't like it there. But the thing about AMC Stubs is you can't go back. They punish you. They're like, you're on hold. You're not allowed to join again until September 2024. This was a few months ago. So I've been caught on kind of like a not really at the movies, not really seeing trailers very much for the past few months. But they really, they're very serious about it. They're like, you can't just like join when you want to see a movie and then go away. We're going to punish you.
Wow.
It's very harsh.
Because I've really, you know, drank the AMC Stubs flavor aid. I'm really, I got an email this morning saying, you have a $5 reward ready to redeem. And I said, oh,
I'll be there later.
I know.
No, I miss it. And I regret it. I regret my transgression. I got to go back.
Yeah. There's
yes, Maxine and slasher energy in the air.
Absolutely. I was really glad you picked this because, yeah, like I said, I haven't really freaked out on Shakespeare since becoming an actor. And it's a rite of passage. It's so timeless. It's always there. I just want to like freak out with people doing Shakespeare like once a week and just go crazy.
I'm not really in actor circles right now. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, like comedy kind of becomes its own thing.
Yes.
With its own sort of like vibe and a group of people and like what you do with it. But I do have this just like constant weird desire to like have a table read of of Macbeth or something with a bunch of people. And I'm like,
I will be there.
Like, what would we do with that? But it...
I think it would be so fun to get a bunch of comedians to do Hamlet, Macbeth, Titus Andronicus, Julius Caesar, and not even to like make fun of it, just to be like,
just
I
like,
don't
we're
get to
do this
exactly
at a show and
exactly
and you can come and we're just gonna play it straight. I've never seen Broadway people do this with like, oh, for my birthday, I did a sing-along of Wicked and everyone sat around a table and we just staged Wicked for each other. And I think
we should do it.
There's less non-musical versions of that make sense, but it'd still be fun.
I think we should do that. I think when you're back in LA, we should do that.
All right. I'm going to hit the ground running with a
good
with an amateur Macbeth table read. Broadwater Theater. Let's go.
Ooh, I mean, how did it feel revisiting it now as an actor, as a writer, you know, this far into your career? How does it feel?
I guess I just didn't realize how much I remembered and how much I had pulled from, like, the fact that like how memorable so many of these lines were. And like that dumb bit that I was doing for like a year or two where I was reciting the Tomorrow speech, I kind of forgot like where it's from or what it is. And it just makes you realize like how sticky these things are. And like, there's another character that I was doing that like involves like some kind of like fake blood and like a woman like going insane and like, the out damn spot is not, like, I'm not saying that, but it is in the back of my head where it's like, this is such a like texture that is so like that people I think can like latch onto really easily. And I feel like it's just such a fun, juicy reference. And I did this weird video where I was like, Ebenezer Scrooge except a bitch. And I was just like saying, like, if the poor rather die, then they better well do it, like whatever it is. And then I started like finding myself doing that with the, like, I think it is like I would have plucked my nipple from his boneless gums and dashed the brains out, but like as just this like stupid bitch. I don't think I'm gonna like post it anywhere. It's just like privately in my private moments. I think I am just like a weird theater kid, and yeah, that never goes away. Even if you have all these other things of like, okay, I guess I have to submit this packet to this thing, or I have to like, okay, I have a show. What am I gonna do for the show? Like all the day-to-day things that keep you like on this weird little hamster wheel, like it, that is what lies under all of it.
Yeah. Man, I'm so glad we got to spend time with this, because it is just like, what a, it's a quick read and it stays with you. It stays in your bones. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great to look at it again and revisit our old friend.
Would you consider it required reading?
I think so.
Absolutely.
I think if you're going to do one, I think it should be this one.
I agree.
Let Romeo and Juliet be a movie. I think that could be a movie you watch in class. I think this is for reading.
Yeah, get some fun kids to play the witches right at the beginning who you know are like going to buy into it and go crazy. Yeah. Get a good start.
Get your freaky goth kids in the beginning and it's so fun.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for this. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I have a podcast called Artists on Artists on Artists on Artists. Crazy title, but it's an improvised Hollywood roundtable podcast where we just improvise as different characters in variety actors on actors style things. So that's it.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Kylie for this episode. This is episode 40, and this is coming out on Wednesday. This Friday is 1 year of required reading, the 1 year anniversary of my very first episode, The Summer I Turned Pretty with Georgia Shank. Thank you so much to everyone for coming along on this ride. I am really proud of what I have made here. So thank you. If you'd like to support the pod, please go to buymeacoffee.com/requiredreading. This episode cost about $10 to produce, so add that up over 40 episodes, you get the drift. Next week, we're doing Inkheart. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. R stands for rowdy. Goodbye.